Hi, I'm Christine Hill-Oakley. I live in Berkeley, and I am a writer who has many jobs. So I am primarily known as the author of Tell Me Everything You Don't Remember, which is a memoir about my recovery from stroke at the age of 33. I also write about trauma, recovery from trauma, and the fact that I'm a single mother, how I became a single mother, as well as race and identity through the writing of my about my urban farm, which I do over at Catapult Magazine. I do write for money. I made a vow a couple years ago that I would no longer write for free. It's something that writers have to do for a while. My day job is as a content manager for Turnitin. I also teach, so I've taught workshops online at Catapult. I'll teach workshops at summer conferences, and most recently I've been working as a visiting professor over at St. Mary's College of California in Moraga. We had been married for 18 years and had been trying to have a baby for 13 of those 18 years and then finally became pregnant. So about a month after I had my child, my husband he found someone else. Simultaneously, I had been struggling with postpartum depression, which then became a very complicated depression. I did not know he was stepping out on me because I was just so overwhelmed with motherhood and having a baby. But eventually over the year, you know, he just stopped coming home except on weekends. And it wasn't until my child was about 10 months old that a friend saw him with another woman on the street, and that friend called me, and I was able to get to the bottom of things because I hadn't checked the banking accounts. I hadn't checked anything for 10 months because I was so underwater. And then I found out the bank account had been depleted. I found out that when I looked at the credit card statements that household items had been bought, I tracked out checks and found out that there were checks for rent at another place. And I found out the name of the person with whom he'd begun a relationship. And, you know, I found all of this out in about 36 hours after I found out. And he was out of town.
And it's as you're struggling with postpartum. You know, so
here's the timeline. Postpartum depression, beginning of year, sleeplessness, not eating, dropping down to high school weight, and just being overwhelmed with a child. And then about 9 months later, I finally admitted that I had postpartum depression. I finally was just like, I have to get help or die. And so I frantically called my doctors all day. By the way, when they say call your doctor when you have postpartum depression,
yeah, let's talk about
they
this.
Don't tell you which doctor to call. So I remember calling my old psychotherapist with whom I've become, you know, like we've maintained a relationship for 25 years.
That's awesome.
And he can't prescribe medicine. So he said, possibly call your child's pediatrician or your primary care physician. So I called my child's pediatrician. They referred me to my OB, my obstetrician. I also called my primary care physician, who told me that they couldn't do anything and to call my OB. So then I called and called my OB and I said, this is an extreme emergency. You have to get back to me today. And they were able to get back to me, I think, by the end of the day and call a prescription in. I mean, it was that dire. It was that confusing. The fact that it took me that long to figure out that this was an actual, like, acute, urgent condition. It took me months to admit to it. And then once I did, I couldn't figure out what next steps were. So
And in that stage of your life, writer was already a major component of your identity, right?
Yes. I had not published a book yet, but I had finished my MFA program and was fully immersed in that identity as a writer.
And writing is a big trial and error process.
Yes.
It takes so many years.
Oh my God,
most
of the overnight successes you see are actually like 5-year overnight successes and such. So, you know, it's a process. So, you know, so I discovered my postpartum depression. And then once I got on Zoloft and was in a much better place. Then I got the phone call from my friend who told me that he'd seen my husband with someone else on the street. And my husband didn't recognize my friend at the time. So that's when, over the next 36 hours, because he was out of town, I said, come home. I will not scream at you. Come home. And then I found out all this information. Of course, he denied it. And then when I had all this information, I said, here's all the information. And then the truth came out. So I spent, like, I was pretty devastated. I gave him a month's chance, much to the chagrin of many of my friends. And ultimately, he decided to leave the marriage. And I spent the next several months very, 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 very sad. I chose sadness because I didn't want to hold it in and crystallize it into anger. I was very aware of my child. I thank my child to this day for instilling in me the resolve to act as graciously as I could and to be as healthy as I could to myself. Because if she weren't there, I think that there would have been nothing holding me back from being my most primitive self.
And I mentioned the writing piece and if that was a piece of your identity, because I think there's a misconception that a writer's life is a very glamorous one.
So oh, no. Some who has that conception?
People who aren't writers, I
oh,
think.
Oh, no, no. I think it's just because of movies, like in Romancing the Stone. Right. And Kathleen Turner is just pouring out all the pages and just going. And I think that in Stranger Than Fiction, there's a somewhat of a portrait of misery with Emma Thompson, you know, struggling with the words on the page. But no, it's the most boring thing, looking thing, and the most grueling thing ever. When I was at a writing residency called Hedgebrook up on Whidbey Island in the Puget Sound, I remember sitting at dinner with other writers. We were laughing, saying, and this is back in the, I think they're still in, when reality shows were a huge thing. And we said, wouldn't it be funny if we had a reality show here? And then we just started cackling because all it would be is pictures of us like scratching our heads, staring at our screens, like sleeping in bed, getting up, you know, being very boring.
And then you look at your screen and rewrite it and all of that.
Yes. And so, no, it's very tedious. I often wish that my passion were accounting. And
there's 100% job placement with that field.
Yes, it is. There is. And also, like, it's very concrete.
Right.
There is a known end to the project. And, like, there's no ambiguity there. So I just really wish my passion were in accounting, because then I could always have a job. Everything's very black and white. You know, it's much more straightforward.
But at the same time, I'm super glad that that's not your passion and that writing is what you have to offer, among other things. The reason I was asking, though, about writing and the kind of the misinformed conception that this is a very glamorous thing, you'd mentioned that you were pregnant after a 13-year marriage in which you'd wanted, maybe, did you, you wanted the child for 13 years. Christine's nodding. We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll unpack it.
I mean, 13 years is a long time. You go through some ebbs and flows. So I was like, if I were being strictly honest, it isn't like the steady high pitch. It wasn't the steady high pitch need for me. But yes.
So, and then now you finally have your child and you're right. And so in many ways, you probably thought like the life you'd been waiting for was about to should be happening in front of you. And yet it was kind of all falling apart.
Yeah, it was a rough start. Motherhood, it was a really rough start into motherhood for me. I mean, it just was. I mean, I was very, 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 very sad at the time. I was on my best behavior for my child. And one of the things I tried to do was look for the lessons.
And what were some of the lessons that you were able to?
I couldn't find any in the experience. But then it was then that I was able to see my stroke with clarity. I had been struggling to write about my stroke for quite some time because I had my stroke on December 31, 2006. So let's call it 2007 because it was on the last day of 2006.
Let's call it that.
So it had been over 10 years. No, over 10 years. Yes, over 10 years. And it had been just something that happened, but I couldn't make real sense of it. And it wasn't until my husband left me and that everything I recognized in my life had been taken away from me and everything in my life was absolutely new and something I could barely recognize. Like my marriage was gone, my job was gone, my financial stability was gone. In its place was a new child, you know, an empty house, you know.
Nobody to support you.
Nobody to support me, an empty bed, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of when I go, I got to hold on to something for strength. I was like, well, I survived a stroke, I guess. And then once I thought of that, I began to see parallels between the two traumas. I began to see the ways in which I had to strategize to recover from my stroke and what I leaned on to get through it. I mean, I leaned heavily on my husband in my stroke recovery, so I credit him that. But in the end, like, it was something that I had to navigate. It was a new terrain as well. And I basically had to tell myself, if I survived a stroke, I think I could survive this. And then, of course, from there, you get into more granularity. What was it about the stroke that's helping me survive this? And I started making connections. And it was during that phase of my life that I was finally able to write about the stroke. So I wrote this essay for BuzzFeed, and then that led to a 2-book deal. So all the gates opened up because I investigated the lessons from a prior trauma, which then made me open to new experiences and receptive to new opportunities. And then my life opened up again. So, you know, I thought that every single door had closed, you know, and motherhood certainly, especially in the early months, is not one of those makes you feel like you can do anything in the world experiences.
True.
It may make you feel strong, but it does not make you feel like liberated or free, at least for those first 6 months. But it so happened to be the setting of this enormous change in my life.
So I always say no struggle, no story. So the silver lining of the demise of the marriage is that it presented an opportunity, one that you wouldn't have chosen, but to look back and really gain clarity about life through this lived experience of a stroke, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a few years since my marriage ended now to unpack it.
So that might be another memoir.
Yeah, who knows? In like 20 years, who knows? I now see that time as some greater force telling me, I gave you a stroke and you didn't learn from it. You didn't set yourself free. I literally changed your brain and you didn't set yourself free. All right, so now I'm going to truly uncage you in the most uncomfortable way and take away everything you know and set you into a new landscape. Now you have no choice but to open your eyes and build yourself a new world. And that's how I see it. It was like, all right, take one didn't do its job, so now here's take two. Now go. And because I had nothing and I had nothing to lose, I decided that year to do everything I could and let go of everything I could do nothing about. So I wasn't able to pay my mortgage. Because
it's a lot.
Myriad reasons. Well, I didn't have a job. I had a new baby. I had postpartum depression and my spouse was not paying support. So I just did what I could, but I knew I could write. And I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And that's what happened. Like, well, that led to a 2-book deal.